From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point. Here's how the stats work in baseball right now. Three big league managers out. Two World Series championships tainted, and one major headache for Major League Baseball. That's just the toll so far. In the days since the league's commissioner, Rob Manfred, released a report detailing cheating schemes by the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox, winners of two of the last three World Series. The schemes involved live video feeds monitored by players and staffers in tunnels just outside dugouts, Apple Watches, and roguishly retro tool of whacking the tops of a trash can to warn batters of curveballs and off-speed pitches. In other words, cheating. This hour on Point, scandal once more strikes America's pastime. Join us. How does the cheating scandal affect how you think about the game and those teams? Where do you draw the line? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. A bit later this hour, we'll be joined by a former Major League Baseball player. With me right now, I'm happy to say, from Bristol, Connecticut, is the award-winning sports journalist and author Jeremy Schapp. He's a mainstay of the network for more than 25 years, host of ESPN's acclaimed news magazine shows Outside the Lines and E60, and host of the weekly radio show The Sporting Life. Jeremy Schapp, welcome to On Point.
David, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the details. I'm going to make you unpack sort of the mechanics of the scandal, right, in a little bit. But let's talk about
No, please don't make me. It's too confusing.
No, we're going to put you on the rack, man. We're going to put, you know, we'll intentionally walk you if you don't. We're going to make you do this. But first, let's talk about the big picture here. How big a scandal is this Major League Baseball, and how big a scandal is this in the pantheon of big-time sports?
Look, this is huge, and I've been thinking about the historical context for the last few days. And in baseball, the sport, you know, that more than any other really treasures its history and reflects on its history constantly. There are so many baseball historians, you kind of lose track, and I count myself as an extremely amateurish one. I mean, there aren't too many... that compare with this, too many scandals. Obviously, there is what happened exactly 100 years ago in the aftermath of the 1919 World Series.
Boy, that timing didn't even occur to me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's exactly 100 years ago at this time that the investigations were gearing up into what had happened at the 1919 World Series, which was won by the Cincinnati Reds over the Chicago White Sox, who were considered a much superior team and had won the World Series 2 years earlier. But several White Sox, of course, were involved with a gambler's scheme to fix that series, to throw it to the Reds. That was an inflection point for the game. It really did change the history of the game, and it certainly changed the way that baseball viewed association with gamblers, et cetera. In the late 1980s, we have the Pete Rose situation, the legendary player who is still baseball's all-time hits leader with 4,256, and probably the biggest personality in the game at that time, although he was no longer playing. He was managing the Cincinnati Reds. And of course, he was banned from baseball for gambling. And then, you know, we have the steroids era, which isn't kind of one of these self-contained, if you will, scandals along the lines of what we're experiencing now, or Pete Rose or the White Sox, but was a story that persisted for more than a decade, and it was cheating. And
it kind of feels as though you look at the baseball during that era, it's just like you take it as a given. That is just true during that era. It's like, you know, a pollution in a city in Los Angeles for decades or something. You know, like, that's just the way it was.
Right. But there were moments, as you know, along the way where, you know, what had been hiding in plain sight sneaked into view, or was brought into view by reporters and by players themselves talking about it, whether it was Ken Caminiti talking to Tom Verducci in Sports Illustrated, or Michael Schmidt doing some remarkable investigative work. At that time, he was a sports writer at the New York Times, not covering politics yet, about steroids and players who had tested positive and tests that they thought would remain anonymous. And this is really, you know, along those lines. It's that big because it goes to the integrity of the games that we're watching. And again, it goes to the integrity of that sacrosanct record book, David. You know, it matters so much in baseball in a way that it really doesn't matter in our team sports when we talk about history, when we talk about a title being tainted, a World Series championship, or the record book, because those numbers mean something in baseball. Whether it's, you know, you don't have to be an obsessive fan to know what 56 means in baseball, or 511.
I mean, I think
or 60.
I think about the fact that there was an asterisk draped on the record of Roger Maris for the sin of having played in a season that had been extended to 162 instead of 154 games, right? Like that was seen as a shadow or, you know, on his record. And this is a very different one. I want to get to a point that you just made about the notion of the fans' obsession with both the outcome, the sanctity of the game. The whistleblower on this was an Astros former Astros pitcher named Mike Fiers. The Athletic broke this story, Kenny Rosenthal, Evan Drellick, on November 12, 2019. So that's published on the Athletic website, these allegations that the Astros had been engaging in sign stealing. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred discussed the penalties that would be faced if that initial report proved to be credible. We now know that it was. He spoke with Yahoo Finance later that same month.
Fans are always the first thing in the front of our minds. And when we discipline in a situation like this, we discipline with a view towards it having a prophylactic effect on the behavior going forward so that we maintain the trust of our fans.
So then this Monday, Houston Astros owner Jim Crane held a live press conference televised announcing the firing of his general manager and his bench manager. His decision came shortly after Rob Manfred released the league's official report detailing the Astros' elaborate scheme to steal signs during the 2017 season and part of the 2018 season.
Today, I have made the decision to dismiss A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. We need to move forward with a clean slate, and the Astros will become stronger, a stronger organization because of this today.
The Astros were fined $5 million, which may seem not like a lot, but it was the maximum allowed under the league contracts, according to the commissioner. And the team also lost first and second round draft picks in 2020 and 2021. So briefly, Jeremy, like one of the things that was surprising to me or a reminder to me, maybe I known and forgot from being a kid playing for a lot of years, it's fine to figure out signs, right? It's fine to dance on the base paths and steal signs and sort of give little signals to your buddy at plate and say, hey, dude, this is going to be a slider. This is going to be a curveball. You can't do it using technology. Tell me what the difference is.
That's the line that's always been drawn. Going back as long as there has been technology that would make that possible.
So tell me, just give listeners a little bit, a soupçon of a reminder of what this scandal involved.
So what this is about, and you got to put this, I think, David, into the context of what was happening in baseball in 2017 and 2018, when there was rampant talk about this kind of cheating taking place and paranoia and teams hearing that it was going on with certain teams, taking measures to prevent it. And so, teams, I heard Buster Olney, my colleague here at ESPN, talking about this on the air yesterday. Teams at that time were reluctant to get on the Wi-Fi systems when they were in visiting clubhouses or visiting dugouts because somehow they thought maybe their communications were going to be hacked. But it starts in 2017 with the Yankees complaining about the Red Sox using Apple Watches for this kind of subterfuge. Mm-hmm. And over the last couple of years, it just kind of mushrooms until we get to the point that the Athletic publishes that report in November, which is a bombshell.
A bombshell because it's based on a guy who was on the team.
Right, because it wasn't rumor. It was someone who was there, someone who you can't come up with the reason why he would make it up. He's certainly putting himself in a position where he's going to be ostracized by some of his former teammates and other people around the game, and he's going to be a pariah to some and a hero to others. So once you've got Mike Fiers on the record saying this is what happened, baseball had to go out and conduct an investigation, and the fruits of that investigation, the results of that investigation, are what we're talking about right now. It's just so interesting, though, and what we're talking about is the Astros setting up a very elaborate system to make it possible for their hitters to know which pitch was coming, which, of course, We could have debates about how valuable that is. But obviously, if it wasn't extremely valuable, they wouldn't have gone to such great lengths to make it possible to do so. So it's first stealing the signs, decoding them, and then communicating to the hitter in the batter's box what is going on. And they would do so with the means, you know, using cameras, center field cameras. Sometimes they would communicate the signs to the runners on second base, if there were runners on second base, and sometimes directly to the hitters in the batter's box by pounding on trash cans not more than 30 feet from where A.J. Hinch would sit in the dugout or stand in the dugout. And they would pound on the garbage cans, apparently, with baseball bats or something that I didn't know until a few days ago existed called a Theragun.
Never
turns out
of
around
it.
Here in Bristol, we have a bunch of them, I guess, you know, if you're
massage guns
shoulder
basically.
Or something like that. Yeah, a massage gun. And so that's what we're talking about. And you know, it's interesting in baseball, David, because, you know, you played the game as a kid in Little League, like tens of millions of Americans, you know, and people are always worried, well, what's the effect of a spitball, you know, or an emery board? And we've seen major leaguers over the years cop to those crimes or get caught in the act. And that's, you know, that's cheating. But as you said before, you know, where do we draw the line? What crosses the line? Gaylord Perry, whose autobiography was titled Me and the Spitter, is in the Hall of Fame. Okay. The spitball was banned in 1920. He made his living. He won Cy Young Awards in each league, you know, largely on the strength of his spitball or on the, you know, or on the perception that he had a spitball. I hear the music.
Exactly,
I guess that means I should rap.
Right. A secret exactly to no one. And yet his ticket to Cooperstown. We're discussing the sign stealing scandal that's caused tremendous upheaval in the Houston Astros clubhouse and has sent shockwaves throughout the game. I'm David Folkenflik, and this is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. Batter up. I'm David Folkenflik. We're discussing the fallout and future for Major League Baseball after a sign-stealing scandal that has taken down some of the game's greatest managers. We can join the conversation. To what degree do you see sports riddled with cheating? How much does it affect your appreciation of the game? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll be joined again by ESPN's Jeremy Schapp and a former professional player for Major League Baseball. But first, we want to take a couple of your calls. Steve is calling us from Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening. Steve, what do you think about this scandal?
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I've been watching baseball. My earliest memory is Sandy Koufax's perfect game in 1965. And I watched the Astros-Dodgers when the Astros came back on Clayton Kershaw, ostensibly the best left-handed pitcher in the game. And I said at the time, either he is tipping his pitches or they are stealing the signs.
Uh-huh.
Because there was no other explanation for the offensive outburst that Houston was able to put forth.
Uh-huh.
I read the commissioner's report on this scandal. And what he said in so many words is there are so many crooked players that we can't possibly discipline them all. So we are going to go after the brass, the management, and he claimed precedent in that Yankees-Red Sox beef that Jeremy mentioned, and it doesn't go far enough. The thing is tainted, and again, in 1919, 1920, you know, Commissioner Landis came out, and his statement, regardless of the verdict of juries, no player that throws a ball game, no player that entertains proposals or promises to throw a game, no player that sits in conference with a bunch of crooked players and gamblers where the ways and means of throwing games are discussed, does not promptly tell his club about it, will ever play professional baseball. And in my opinion, that is what should happen now.
Well, Steve, thank you for that call, and thank you for sharing that. What I love about On Point, our callers are sports fans who will quote from century-old historical documents with verisimilitude. I appreciate it, Steve. Let's go now to Clint from Atlanta, Georgia. Clint, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in.
Sure thing. Glad that y'all took my call. I just wanted to talk about something that's going on in Georgia right now. In our state legislature, we're currently deliberating about whether or not to allow sports gambling in Georgia. Obviously, the Braves, the Falcons, the Hawks, everybody's weighing in heavily on this in favor. I have
big
no personal
town.
Moral standing in it. I am a big Atlanta sports fan. But I don't have any personal, standing in this or anything in terms of morals. I think it could go either way. I think the gambling could be a good and bad thing for the state. But what does shake my faith is something like this happening in baseball at such a high level, and whether or not we can trust the integrity of something like that. Because in order for this to happen in Georgia, the House and the Senate have to vote yes on it. The governor has to say yes. And then we have to have a referendum vote because the constitution of the state will have to be amended. And if I continue to see things like this happen in professional sports, then I just don't think that that can be something that's good for the public, good for revenue, and good for the face and the future of the sport.
Thank you for that, Clint. Fascinating public policy elements for the implications for what happens when trust is shaken. So I want to reintroduce my guests from ESPN headquarters in Bristol, Bristol, Connecticut, the self-described worldwide leader in sports.
David. I think it's indisputable.
Indisputable? Is that the way that works now? It's just sort of by common assent.
Exactly.
It is Jeremy Schapp, the loquacious host of ESPN's acclaimed news magazine programs Outside the Lines and E60. Joining us now also from Miami, Florida, Eduardo Perez. He played 13 seasons in the major leagues, served as the bench coach of the Houston Astros in 2013, and subsequently hitting coach of the Miami Marlins from 2011-2012. Currently a baseball analyst also for ESPN. Eduardo Perez, thanks for joining us today on Point.
Oh, thanks for having me, David and Jeremy. It's a pleasure being on with you guys.
Eduardo, let's talk about what we've just heard from these callers in two very different states, but big sports areas. They're really fundamentally talking about the trust they have and the respect they have for the players, that it is shaken. They are not cynics, right, about the game. These guys, whether or not fully representative of fans of baseball, these guys are saying it affects how I think about the game. How does this shape your thinking about the game?
Well, I think the fans have every right to think that, especially after looking at the scandal that's been going on and how the Astros were able to collaboratively as a team be able to start giving the signs. And the commissioner, I think, was aggressive with the punishment as much as he could, fine the organization, the $5 million. And at the same time, you want to be able to get the information. And a lot of people are thinking, well, are the players supposed to also get punished? Why were they not held accountable? Mm-hmm. But they were able to interview 68 people. That's Major League Baseball, and included in there were the players. And I don't think the players would have participated in those interviews and been up front if they would not have had the ability to and knew that they were not going to get punished. And Major League Baseball wanted to know the truth. They wanted to know it. And they held the manager and they held Jeff Luhnow, the general manager, accountable for all of this. But I think moving forward, we're going to hear the players' voices a little bit more. We've seen it in social media. We've seen them speak out. Mike Fiers finally put his name in front of something that wasn't an undisclosed player that did not want to do it. He
right.
did do it. And I think that's going to be the turning point in all of this. And I think the union is going to hear the voices of the players saying, we just want the sport to be clean, just like it was with the steroids. They wanted that part to be clean. They want a fair playing field. And eventually, I believe that moving forward, maybe players will be held accountable because the players themselves want that.
Eduardo, as a consequence of what the commissioner found, there were firings throughout the game, right? You had the GM and the coach at Houston fired. You had Alex Cora, very popular manager for the Boston Red Sox, fired for his involvement in the 2017.
I want to stop that. I want to make sure that, because even Sam Kennedy interrupted the press conference to make sure that they knew that it was a mutual agreement. And he made it a fact. He let everyone know this was a mutual agreement to not use the word fired. And I think the same thing goes for the Mets with Carlos Beltran.
All right, let's say that then. The departures of the manager at the Red Sox, a fair distinction, who had been a victorious manager in 2018 right. World Series, had also participated in 2017 World Series winning management of the Astros. Carlos Beltran had been a player and had not been subject to any punishment. And Cora, as I understand it, was also under investigation for whether the 2018 Red Sox had engaged in cheating in this way. Beltran was not to be punished by Major League Baseball, as he had been a player, but the Mets and he mutually, as you say, decided to part ways, right? You know, as Peter Latman, a journalist who's oversees The Atlantic magazine, points out, he says it's okay for the Mets to be owned by a man whose hedge fund pleaded guilty to insider trading, meaning he can effectively run criminal enterprise. The hypocrisy of it all. People in Houston are saying, gosh, or people who are critics of Houston say, gosh, you know, it is true. There's been this sweeping of the front offices. And at the same time, Jim Crane has to pay a $5 million thing, which is like a backup second baseman, basically, still gets to hold on to the World Series title. Does this taint in any way what the two teams achieved by doing it? Do the owners get to walk gently, or is this an appropriate meeting out of responsibility and punishment by the front offices of Major League Baseball?
Well, you talk front offices of Major League Baseball, and Jim Crane came out publicly that when they asked him about that, if it tainted him, and he said he didn't believe so. I think it does. I think in the public opinion, I believe that people look at it and are always going to be skeptical. They're going to be skeptical of the ability of those players that were able to take advantage of knowing what was coming, when it was coming. And it makes a total difference as a player when you know if it's a fastball on a 1-2 count, where sometimes they'll spin a slider and they'll try to surprise you with a fastball. It's advantage hitter, even when the pitcher has the advantage in his count. And what people don't understand is that as a hitter, it's not so much the pitch that you hit, it's the pitch that you take to get to the count so you can hit the pitch that is even more predictable in the zone where you want to hit it. I think that's where the biggest difference is. And it frustrates pitchers when you think, wow, how did he lay off that slider? It was so nasty, yet he laid off it. It's because he knew it was coming. And that taints the, if it's the World Series championship of the Astros in 2017, if it's the championship of the Red Sox in 2018. And all the players would want is the evening of the playing field. And that being said, as much as it taints it towards front office and ownership and the fans, it taints it within the game of players looking at other players differently. And that is what I believe is going to change and rock the system moving forward, where the union might have to do something forced upon by the players.
Jeremy Shapp, let's pick that up for a second. It sounds as though there are a lot of players who want this game to be clean, or at least clean within the confines of the rules of the game, and are frustrated by it. Has baseball appropriately addressed what the players did, or would it have just been too hard, as the commissioner suggested, to mete out punishments appropriately to players, given how many people were involved and how to grade eight, who did what, who knew how much, who did how much?
I mean, that's what the commissioner says, right? It would have been too difficult. Rob Manfred is not known as a guy who's going to go soft on the players. You know, he comes at his job as commissioner from the perspective of being someone on the other side of the labor negotiations from the players, where he was known for, I guess you could put it this way, right, Eduardo? He was hardcore. He's a guy who doesn't give an inch. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that it would have been in some ways too difficult to suss this out. And it's not a reflection of his sentiment that the players aren't in the wrong, because clearly, you know, they were in the wrong, those who participated in this scheme. It is interesting, David, though, that here we are having this discussion about what constitutes cheating in baseball, what crosses the line, how punishment should be meted out for players versus managers versus front office personnel. At the same time that a couple of days from now, I hope I'm not taking us into left field to employ a terrible.
This is the right game. Go ahead.
Less than felicitous phrase. You know, we might find out in the next few days that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are going into the Hall of Fame. Guys who are so
ultimately
associated.
The cheating wins.
Maybe. I mean, their candidacies have been gaining momentum for a number of years now. They're right there. Most predictions say on the threshold of reaching selection, and these are guys who are very much thought of as having benefited from the use of performance enhancing drugs, and you know they've been kept out of Cooperstown. They might continue to be kept out of Cooperstown, and yet these players, and now this 2017 World Series, Eduardo's exactly right. Is tainted forever in many people's minds and should be. And at the same time, the players who are involved are getting off scot-free, with the exception of Carlos Beltran, who's in a different situation.
As a manager. So let's take now a historical moment. Joining us for now from Washington, D.C. is Del Wilbur. He's a former colleague of mine in the Baltimore Sun, currently an investigative reporter for Los Angeles Times. His grandfather, bearing the same name, as I believe, both played and managed in the major leagues and was, as he indicated on Twitter recently, not unfamiliar with sign-stealing at the highest levels of baseball. Del, welcome to On Point.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave.
So, Del Quentin Wilbur, your grandfather was in the majors, and yet he revealed to you at one point later in life that he had been engaged in sign stealing of his own in a way that might not have been kosher. Tell us what that involved.
Yeah, sure. Well, my grandfather, known as Skip in the family, was a 8-year major league catcher for the Red Sox, Phillies, and Cardinals.
And
the
what
last
years?
2 years, in the 40s and 50s.
Yep.
And in 1955, he gets hired by Marty Marion, the manager of the White Sox, to be like basically a bullpen catcher, coach, right? It would be a pitching coach, catching coach today. And his job in the 1955 season was he'd warm up the pitchers, then he would don a suit and go into the Comiskey Park scoreboard, the old Comiskey Park scoreboard, and stare at the pitcher, at the catcher's signs through a pair of binoculars or a telescope, as he variously told me. At the catcher signs, and then signal to a pitcher to flick a light switch, which he brought from his house, that to flick a light in the bleacher area behind the pitcher if it was a fastball. Now, he and Marion didn't want to – I had been incorrect. I had talked to my dad about this, and I remembered it the other way. But they wanted to flash a light if it's a fastball because you don't want to be – get if you splash it and it's a off-speed pitch, curveball, for example, and you're ready for a curveball and it happens to be a fastball and you're wrong, hit you in the head. The other funny thing I learned – was that my dad was digging, like when he was a kid, he was going through my grandfather's possessions in his basement. He found a box that said White Sox. He opened it thinking he'd find like a baseball glove, some balls or whatever. And it was my grandfather's, on White Sox stationery, his breaking of the catcher's codes. So he'd be staring, and then he'd say, okay, you know, he flashed three signs, and it was a fastball. He flashed four signs, it was a curveball, whatever, all the way down. He got all these catchers, and about the second or third inning, he figured out what the signs were. And that's when he started signaling to the batters, not all of them, a lot of them didn't want it at that time, what the pitch was coming.
So it's like Bletchley Park in World War II, basically, cracking the code.
Yes,
and what was he using? What was he using to look at the pitches?
Through binoculars, or he told me it was like a periscope or a telescope taken from a Japanese submarine in World War II. Very powerful. But he got to Yogi Berra, and my dad is reading this list. And Yogi Berra is that, you know, the famous catcher who had all those crazy sayings, you know, like, you know, you know, the fat lady singing, stuff like that. And Yogi is kind of a weird guy. Well, he's going through, he has like the whole game, and he couldn't figure out Yogi's signs. Like, he couldn't get it right. So later in life, he bumps into Yogi Berra at this event. And he's like, hey, man, I just let you know, in the 50s, I tried to steal your signs. I got every catcher in the league but yours. What were you doing? What kind of, did you change them? What kind of thing were you doing? He's like, oh, I just made it up. I told the pitcher to throw whatever he wanted. I just catch it.
So the best code to break it all is one of complete nonsense and gibberish.
Yeah, that's not even a code.
And back then, out of curiosity.
You're an idiot. You didn't even know it was coming.
Del Wilbur, very quickly, back then, was this considered cheating, or was this considered just a part of the game?
No, it was cheating. In fact, what's really interesting is, so my grandfather tells me this before he dies in like 2000, 2001, and I'm going to write an essay about it, but I couldn't find an outlet to write the essay, and I interviewed Marty Marion. I got Marty Marion on the phone, longtime baseball player, famous
very
ball player, coach. Yeah, yes. And I said, Marty, my grandfather told me he was stealing the signs for you. And Marianne says to me, why would your grandfather tell you that? There's supposed to be secrets in baseball.
There's supposed to be, there's no crying in baseball, and there's supposed to be secrets. Some of them broke out into the open this week. That's Del Wilbur of the Los Angeles Times. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be rejoined by Jeremy Schapp of ESPN and Eduardo Perez, former professional player and baseball commentator. We're discussing Major League Baseball in the wake of that sign-stealing scandal and the impact on the integrity of professional sports when teams cheat. Join our conversations. Were the penalties handled down by Major League Baseball sufficient? How severe do you think, how important do you think the transgressions were of the Houston Astros compared to other sports cheating scandals? I'm David Folkenflik. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. We're looking at Major League Baseball under siege following a sign-stealing scandal whose tentacles can be felt across the sport and across all professional sports. Well, you can join the conversation. What questions do you have for my guest? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me, Jeremy Schapp. He's host of the ESPN's acclaimed news magazine programs Outside the Lines and E60, and Eduardo Perez. He's a former major league player and coach, now serves as an analyst for ESPN. Eduardo, my understanding is that you were kind of known in your playing days as a guy pretty good at picking up pitches, pretty good at figuring them out. Tell us what skills you used, how you were able to figure out what they were, whether from catchers or from, you know, pitchers
right.
Tipping off what they were about to deliver.
Well, I have to correct you on that. I would say I wasn't pretty good. I would say I was really good at it. So the reason I say that is...
Eduardo, don't sell yourself short here.
No, I'm not selling myself short at all. And I'll tell you why. Because I learned in 1983, the first time I was in the dugout was in a major league dugout was in 1983. And It was with the Philadelphia Phillies. And Pete Rose was the one that sat me and said,
learn from the master.
I learned from the hit king. And it was, and he said, if you're not playing, you're watching the pitcher at all times. I'm not on the roster. I'm 13 years old. He goes, I just wanted to eat sunflower seeds. And He goes, no, you sit here, and every pitch, you're going to tell me what's coming before he throws it. And that summer of 83 changed my entire life, my career, everything that I didn't even know what I was going to do when I grew up. But it made it a lot easier for me to play the game. The pitchers had nuances. If it's the index finger that was in the glove, if they wiggled it, it could be fastball. If they didn't, it was a breaking ball. If they had the glove a little bit bigger, because they had to get the change up, they had to do the circle change of the glove. So
the
webbing.
Catchers are holding their thumb and their pinky finger wires to make a bigger target.
No. It had nothing to do with the catcher. It had to do with the pitchers. Everything. When you're in the batter's box, you're not looking at the catcher. You're looking at the pitcher, and the pitcher is so focused on making the right pitch all the time, to location, velocity, hitting the spot, you name it. And in the meantime, I'm focused on the glove at all times. Because once that pitcher puts the ball in the glove, he's got to change his grip. Any little movement, any little subtle movement from one grip to another, I always looked at the cadence of it, the height of the glove, the height of the hands, the elbows, if they flared out or not. Some pitchers would open their mouth when they threw a curveball, but they wouldn't when they threw a fastball because they were trying to get more on it.
So
any
cool.
little detail I would have to look at. And I was fortunate because in A-ball, when I was in Palm Springs in 1992, I bunted a ball out of off my left eye, and I lost part of the vision of my left eye. So I had a cataract, and I needed to find a way to know what was coming. So I played 13 years, parts of 13 years in the big leagues, literally with one eye. And I did it because most of the time I knew what was coming. And it was easier for me against left-handed pitching than right-handers because I knew that left-handers were mostly fastball changeups against right-handed hitters. But they weren't throwing the curveball for a strike. So I laid off that pitch, and I knew when to set the pitcher up for that fastball or that changeup. Or if it was a fastball slider pitcher, he would show me also what he did in that moment.
Eduardo, before we let you go, obviously video and technology has made a lot of things possible in a different way. How responsible, A.J. Hinch was said to have actually been so annoyed that he claimed anyway to Major League Baseball that he damaged two of the monitors so that they couldn't be used, but never actually formally said, guys, this is a thing, don't do it or there will be consequences. How much do you lay this on the managers for leading as opposed to the players and staffers who were involved?
Well, AJ was the leader of the group. He was the one that had to be held accountable. He did not voice his opinion there, and I think that's definitely what cost him his job. But there are players, and look, it's very difficult to police 25 players at the same time when you're trying to focus on the game during the game. And players prepare differently. I was a player that I looked at video all the time. I still prepare when I broadcast baseball games, looking at the video as if I were a hitter, breaking down that pitcher, any little nuances that they do. And with the technology that's out there today, I don't blame the players for preparing for the game. But when they start planning on a malicious way of being able to take advantage and cheat the system, that is drawing the line. But being able to take advantage of a pitcher, if he's tipping his pitches, if he's telling you what's coming, that's on the pitcher. And that's on you, that you have to do your homework to try to get any little advantage that you can if the pitcher is telling you exactly what's coming. But using technology in-game, real-time, that's where the line definitely is drawn, and I do not agree with it, or do I condone it.
Well, there are a lot of reports and rumors swirling about who may take some of these vacancies and some of these managerial positions. My guest Eduardo Perez, his name has surfaced in some of these. We'll be looking to see what plays out in coming days and weeks. Eduardo Perez, former Major League Baseball player and coach, thanks so much for joining us today.
Appreciate having me, and thank you, Jeremy, also for being part of this.
Always great being with you, Eduardo.
We are, as Eduardo suggests, still have on the line with us Jeremy Schapp, host of ESPN's Outside the Lines.
I thought you forgot about me, Dave. I'm offended.
I try. Okay. I try I would, and I try I and I fail every time.
Well. Okay.
I fail every time. But I do want to also concentrate on our listeners. I want them to weigh in briefly here. I want to take a call from Tampa, Florida. Daniel, thanks for listening.
Hi, David. I just wanted to make a comment about the wider implications that the sign-stealing scandal might have. Aside from the fact that, yes, they are tainted the game, and now they're going to have an asterisk next to their World Series win, but being a Tampa Bay Rays fan, I live in a city where we're in very real danger of losing our ball club to another city. Mm. And having played the Astros in the playoffs last season, in a game where one pitch can make the difference between winning and losing, and this was a Game 7, who knows what could have happened if they were stealing signs? Maybe the Rays had made it on to the next level. Maybe they even won the championship. And now we stay in Tampa, which can have a big impact on a small market like Tampa St. Pete.
Wow. Daniel, thank you for that. Jeremy Schapp, look, you and I have talked over the years. You've covered God knows how many Tour de France's or Tours de France, should I say, like attorneys general.
Tours. Yeah,
that's a good way to go. So, that's a sport which is rife with cheating. It asks almost superhuman things of its participants, right? And it seems as though pretty much 170% of people participating in that race have cheated one way or another with illegal, doping substances to get them to be able to perform at that level. But when there are consequences, then the next guy gets to win, right? It doesn't the title doesn't stay with Lance
and
Armstrong. He's stripped of it.
Well, yeah, and sometimes though they had to go down, a few levels as they've had to do in the Olympics, particularly in sports that have been deeply affected by performance enhancing drugs. And sometimes it seems kind of farcical. It's like, well, how far down do we have to go before we find someone who did not happen to test positive in this event, but they did test positive three tours to go or in another event, the Giro d'Italia. I mean, it gets it gets to be kind of ridiculous.
None of the participants this year, but a guy who's a bike messenger from Queens can probably declare the winner.
It gets complicated. But what the caller was saying, you know, that is an excellent point because, right, everybody now who lost to the Astros, who competed against them in the last few years and came out on the short end, which is just about everybody, now has, a reason to be very upset, a legitimate reason to be very upset and to ask whether, history would be different if they had not been cheating and if they had not taken if they had not gone to these extraordinary lengths to give themselves an advantage. And those are fair questions. And in Tampa, you know, they might have these very big repercussions. Who knows what would have happened if Tampa had gone farther?
I'd like to take a call now from Watertown, Massachusetts. Bob, thanks for waiting. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I appreciate the opportunity to join the discussion. Mm-hmm. First comment is on the history here. In 1951, the famous playoff between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants, the Giants were stealing signs. They had a guy in center field with a telescope, and he had a button that he would push, one buzz for a fastball, two for an off-speed pitch, and that would go to the dugout, and the batter would quickly know what was coming.
The buzzer went to the bullpen, and then the bullpen would signal the hitter.
Okay.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. I was hoping we would get to this because, you know, the Bobby Thompson home run struck at exactly 2:58 p.m. Eastern time on October 3rd, 1951, in the third game of that playoff to defeat the Dodgers and capping a remarkable comeback for the Giants in the second half of that season is perhaps the most famous moment in
Can I play the clip for you?
Year, yes, please do.
Can I play the clip? So this is exactly as Jeremy has set it up. This is the iconic pennant-winning home run call, ninth inning, third playoff game between the Brooklyn Dodgers. It'll pain my mother in memory of my father, a Giants fan. Let's play that from October 3rd, 1951.
Up there swinging. Back to throw.
Mr. Schaap, pick up the story from there.
Yeah, so that's Russ Hodges, the most famous call in baseball history, I would say. And Bobby Thompson hits that home run off of the Dodgers' Ralph Branca. And this is, you know, along with Babe Ruth's home run in the 1932 World Series that was either a called shot or not a called shot off Charlie Rood. I mean, it's one of the analyzed. It's one of the most talked about. It's, you know, Don DeLillo wrote a book basically centering around this moment in history, and it changed the trajectories of the lives of the two people involved, two people most essentially involved, Ralph Branca, the pitcher, and Bobby Thompson, the hitter. And then we find out half a century later through the reporting of Josh Prager in the Wall Street Journal that the Giants were cheating. And Leo DeRocher, their manager, and Herman Franks, one of his coaches, had this scheme, which is very much like what we're talking about now with the Astros. So much time had passed between the home run itself, this iconic moment, and the revelations that, you know, most people have kind of like forgotten it or dismissed it, or that, you know, it hasn't changed.
I feel like if it happens that far in the past, you're like, oh, gosh, those rogues, you know, it's sort of funny, right?
Exactly.
Whereas if it happens now, it's outrageous.
Yeah. Keith Olbermann did a great piece on the air the other day, breaking down the whole thing off of Prager's reporting. I'm sure there's still some Dodgers fans who are very upset about it. Look, I spoke to Ralph Branca about this.
The man who delivered the pitch that was sent into the stands.
You know, who was burned in effigy, because fans were so upset, all that stuff. And they'd become friends over the years, over the decades, Bobby and Ralph. And my father, Dick Schaap, the reporter, brought them together on a number of occasions.
Greatest.
He was a Dodgers fan. And Ralph was bitter. Even after decades, he found out 50 years later that this traumatic moment in his life that haunted him for so long was the result of some kind of cheating. He wasn't in a mood to forgive Bobby.
you know, you wonder the degree to which it breeds a kind of cynicism. There have been videos making the rounds in the last couple of days, maybe the last 24 hours, of Jose Altuve, you know, the pint-sized hero yep. for the Astros of this past season, and how he hit this incredible – was it the series-winning home run? Was it the championship-winning home
winning.
Run? Pennant-winning home run for the American League. He comes off stage, and he's basically clutching his jersey. He's holding it as tight as he can, as though he's holding on to something for dear life. And then they hand him a T-shirt that shows the, you know, American League champs, and all the other players come streaming on the team. And he's saying, don't pull off the shirt. He goes into the dugout, comes back maybe 10, 12 seconds later. And Kenny Rosenthal, ironically, one of the two reporters who broke this story.
Or not ironically, yeah.
Maybe not ironically, who broke this story, good point, for The Athletic a couple months back that triggered the Major League Baseball investigation. Kenny Rosenthal on the sidelines in his bow tie asked the question, what was the deal with the shirt? And, you know, Altuve hems and haws and says, I don't know. And then he says, you know, I'm just a shy and my wife teases me when I get my shirt taken off on the field. Is it wrong for a fan to say, what the heck is under that jersey?
Definitely not wrong. I mean, it's a very natural question to be asking right now, a few days after we heard Commissioner Rob Manfred detail this scheme. And last time I looked on Twitter, I think that video had been viewed at least one of the postings a million times. Now, baseball has said that they looked into wearables. I guess that's the word we use these days for these kinds right. of things. Wearables and whether they were part of
body buzzer
huge.
Yep.
Yeah. In 2017, 18 and 19. And they say they found no evidence that was the case or that Altuve was wearing it, but it doesn't mean that it didn't happen.
Jeremy, in the little less than a minute that we have, does it matter if the Astros are being punished in cheating in part in 2018 when they didn't go to the World Series? Does it matter how well a team does if it breaks a rule that fundamental?
I mean, it matters only in the sense that it's obviously going to make a bigger impact. We're going to think about it a lot more. We're going to talk about it a lot more if the stakes are higher, you know, if it's the World Series or it's the Championship Series. And it taints the record book in that way. You know, if they do it in a game on April 22nd, it's not the same as doing it as a game in October, at least in terms of the way history will see it. But it doesn't mean that Rob Manfred should necessarily make a distinction between cheating when the stakes are at their highest and when they're not.
You've been hearing the words of the great Jeremy Schapp, host of ESPN's Outside the Lines in East 60. Honored to have you with us, brother.
Pleasure. Thank you, David.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on the Twitters, find us on the Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point's produced by Anna Bauman, Justine Daum, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, Dori Scheimer, Grace Tatter, and Adam Waller, with help from Carolyn Love, Bradley Noble, and Sydney Wertheim. I want to take a moment to acknowledge today is the last day of Alex Schroeder. He's our digital producer, which conveys what he does much of the time, but not who he is. Yes, he orchestrates our online presentations and our tweets and our newsletters. He's also a savvy and thoughtful news guy with the soul of a poet. I'll never forget how Alex helped me sculpt an appropriate hour to honor Toni Morrison last year and how he kept up to date with politics, sports, the news, and pop culture alike. A lovely person with an eye and an ear for language, fairness, and wit. We'll miss you, buddy. On to your new adventure here in the Big Apple. Me, I'm David Folkenflik, and you've been listening to On Point.